Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Prepoint Pod. We are marching into March with Ellen Pataniti, otherwise known as Perth Dance Physio. Ellen offers some fabulous insights into the nitty-gritty of strength training for dancers and shares her passion for the humble knee extension machine. This is a must listen for any dancer who is yet to dive into the gym. People like Ellen are out there to help. So go get them, but don't get them all at once. This is Ellen Pataniti, and she is a physiotherapist from Perth, Australia. So working in private practice and also at the West Australian Ballet. And you've been at WAB for how long, did you say?
4 years now.
4 years. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah. And then also working in private practice with aspiring professional dancers, perhaps in Perth.
Yeah.
And you were saying before that you've been in Perth forever, Ellen. So tell us a little bit about where your dance journey started and where it took you.
Yeah, so I grew up in Perth, and my sister was probably actually the one that got me into dancing. She'd started the year before me, being older, and according to Mum, I pretty much just spent that whole year with my nose just pushed up to the glass, just absolutely mesmerised, waiting to get in there. So then following year I started, and I actually then cried every single lesson, basically, so poor Mum. But she persevered, and it kind of just grew from there, and you know, every year I kind of just added more and more classes until it was all I was doing, really. So worked my way through all RED and CSTD, classical and theatrical exams, and then also danced at school, doing dance for my ATAR, which is our final exams for school here in Perth. And then, yeah, pretty much once I'd finished all my exams, finished school, I continued dancing. So probably kept dancing into my mid-20s, just doing some open classes, was still doing classical ballet, contemporary, jazz, tap at the same studio that I'd been at forever. And then also taught contemporary as well. So while I was studying at uni, I did some teaching, and I never thought I'd actually get into teaching as much as I did, but I think looking back now, the crossover of what that taught me for physio has been quite a lot. I think just that explaining things and teaching things explaining things to either dancers or patients has been a good skill from dance teaching. And then, probably in my mid-20s is when I stopped dancing. So mainly just work got hectic, and just time-wise probably took a toll with that. And I think I still felt very connected to the dance world. I think when you're surrounded by it every single day within the clinic, at the West Australian Ballet, like I think it didn't feel like I was walking away from it. Just thought almost just like I was transitioning on stage to backstage. Like it didn't feel like a big deal necessarily. And I think also I just needed to try something else, and it probably coincided with physio to when I started dabbling a bit more in strength work with my physio role. So I kind of felt that I needed to try something different and do some strength and gym stuff myself. And dancing was all I'd really ever done. Like I'd never done any other conditioning stuff or sport. Mum made me do tennis when I was in primary school to try and improve my hand-eye coordination. Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't really.
She was unsuccessful. No, yeah, exactly.
I think my tennis teacher had to tell me to stop tap dancing on the tennis court and go and have some dance lessons.
Yeah, there you go. Our parents just trying to get us better at hand-eye coordination. But anyway, so she failed. But apart from that, I'd never really done anything other than dancing. So it was an interesting change when I stopped dancing to start some gym stuff, and I just absolutely loved it. I probably haven't danced now in maybe 4 or 5 years. And I've probably only just started, maybe in the last few months, kind of missing it a little bit more and thinking that I might go back and do some classes, which is kind of like an interesting full circle thing to get to. So dance was a massive, massive part of my kind of childhood and teenage years. And now I'm super lucky because I get to still keep that in my career.
Yeah. Look, and I have to agree with you there too. Like, even though I don't go to classes mm-hmm. super regularly, and I have been through phases during my 20s where I did, you know, every week I'm going to ballet, or every week I'm going to jazz, and I do amateur theatre and stuff, but you never really feel like you lose that connection because you are around dance all day.
Yes.
And I think my foot intrinsics are probably stronger now than they ever were when I was actually dancing,
because I'm demonstrating it all the time. Yeah.
Demonstrating exercises. I don't know whether you do much, or whether you've done much Pilates, so reformer Pilates. So I guess that was the first, introduction to resistance work I had as a physio. But then, I tell a lie, I did sort of start to go to the gym and do some weight training when I finished dancing, but not real proper strength training, like heavy weight training, till just recently, because it was part of my research. So I guess, who kind of convinced you that it was a good idea?
That's fair. So my partner, Jack, who's also a physio actually, he was probably the biggest driver for it. He'd had a background in rugby and had always kind of dabbled in gym stuff and conditioning on the side. So once we finished uni, he just kind of took a deep dive into exercise and strength and conditioning, and he would basically sign up for a course and then I'd say, yeah, I'll come too. So I basically almost just by osmosis just started listening to him talking about it and listening to podcasts and tagging along to every lecture and course that he went to. Kind of almost indirectly just picked it up from him in a sense. So because of him, probably the first course that I did, which made a big difference for my thinking, I did the ASCA strength and conditioning coaching level one course, which probably really taught me how I should be prescribing exercises within the clinic. I think it's very easy early on in your physio career just to get caught up in that 3 sets of 10 kind of prescription for every exercise. So that course gave me a lot of insight into programming, but then also different ways to exercise, different energy systems, things like that, but then also hugely just prescribing exercises within the clinic, which I think was a good take-home message for me at the time, just given where I was, you know, very early on in my career. Also, Merv Travers, I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's a amazing physio researcher and strength and conditioning coach here in Perth, and I've basically been to every course and lecture that he's done, and his approach to research but also approach to training and teaching and empowering physios to lift, you know, in order to teach that to our patients, I think it's been a really big thing for me, and he's taught me a lot. He's great. So I think I just kind of picked it up from all these amazing people along the way and then realized, wait a second, I'm not doing any of this. So it's funny you talk about, you know, Pilates was probably your first introduction. For me, it was probably group fitness training. You know, like I started doing like an F45 style class where, you know, I still had music on. It was still a little bit almost like a dance class in that it's very structured and you get told what to do.
Classes.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, we've all been there, right? So that was probably my first introduction of like, oh, I want to lift something heavier, but I still want to do it to music in a coordinated fashion, right? Yep. So, yeah, that was probably my introduction. And then when I realized, actually, this is not strength training, there's 10 seconds between every set here, that made me probably transition into going, all right, let's go into the gym and actually lift heavy things. Do you know what I mean? And do it properly. So, and then I guess from there, once I started loving it, then it was that process of, okay, let's start encouraging patients and dancers to do it. And that's probably one of my favorite parts of my job now. I go to the gym with, this is within the clinic space, I go to the gym with dancers. I program for them. I love writing programs. But also I just think de-threatening that environment. I think for a lot of dancers, male and female, who haven't been in that space, it feels a little bit overwhelming and it feels like we don't know the etiquette or how it kind of works. So I love that part of my job. And I just offer that as, you know, a random extra of, I'll go to the gym with you. I'll write your program. I'll show you the machines. And then I just encourage them to walk past the treadmill and go to the lifting section, you know? So
yeah.
it's been nice. Yeah. I've really loved that process of being a dancer and never really lifting anything. And actually, when I was thinking about this, I probably actually didn't lift a weight until I went to uni. Mm. Like I probably actually never lifted anything with intent until we would have had like a strength and conditioning unit at uni, which was pretty sparse anyway. So it's probably been an interesting journey over, I don't know, 10 years or so of never having lifted anything to now kind of, you know, as you said, doing some heavy strength training.
It's funny because I think I think it was probably when I had started at uni as well that I did join a gym and somebody showed me around.
Yeah.
But then I guess never thought that it was important for me to lift heavy weights. And then now I'm really quite happy to show that to my patients. And I think it can be a bit intimidating. And also having enough time and programming strength training in for dancers so that they have enough time to do it and a space that's safe and things like that. Because to lift really heavy weights, you do need a proper setup. And I think that's one of the things that can be a huge barrier. Mm-hmm. Just going back a step though, because I think we've sort of started talking about strength training really quickly, which is great. But thinking about the difference between, say, the different types of strength training, because I think that's really important for dancers to understand, and especially, you know, when you can just get on Google now and Google anything, like strength training program, and you end up with this crazy hypertrophy program.
Yeah.
So the difference between an endurance program, strength, hypertrophy, power, all of those different goals or objectives require different exercise prescriptions. So you were talking before about the three sets of 10, which in physiotherapy, we kind of train movement patterns, I guess, and three sets of 10 by 10 second holds or something like that, you know, that we talk about for really small muscles, you know, activating them, whatever that muscle might be, like deep abdominals, transverse abdominis, that's like the classic one, right? But then, so going from that, where do you move next? Do you even go there? Do you even start there? Sometimes I just start straight away with functional movement.
I think the rep and set conversation is an interesting one, because I think what we learned at uni has actually changed so much. And I learned a lot of this from Merv Travers, where originally we used to think of strength training as lower reps, higher weight, and that endurance training as higher reps, lower weight. The actual current knowledge now says that if you're training that traditional strength training, which is that lower reps, higher weight, you actually get improvements across all aspects anyway. So by training that strength protocol, you're pretty much getting improvements in not only strength, but power, endurance, and muscular growth as well. Whereas there's been studies to show if you train that endurance training, which was that higher rep, lower weight, you only get improvements in endurance. So I think this probably comes down to the myth of time a little bit as well, because I think for a lot of dancers, they think, okay, if I'm doing really heavy weights for lower reps, I'm going to get huge. Therefore, I want to get that slow burn of endurance. But really, if you lift heavier for less reps, you're probably going to get a better outcome and you spend less time in the gym as well, right? So I think it's another thing that I've heard from him actually is that a dancer or a person who has never trained resistance training or strength training before, you can basically think of them as a new tube of toothpaste. Do you know what I mean? If you squeeze anywhere, you're going to get some improvement. So again, coming down to time is really, this group of people can have a really immediate change, you know, with not a huge investment. So again, time-wise, you're this blank canvas where wherever you chuck paint, it's gonna make something pretty. So I think that time one is an interesting one. But yeah, the reps and sets, it probably has changed a lot from what even I learned at uni, which was, you know, 10 years ago. Like just within that last decade, probably our understanding of endurance versus strength versus hypertrophy has probably changed a lot.
So in terms of the time that dancers spend, I mean, some dancers will spend hours and hours and hours in the gym or in the Pilates room. Yeah. And the number of times that I've come up to a dancer who's on the elliptical trainer and there's no resistance on the elliptical trainer and they're just there like running on thin air. And I'm like, what are you actually aiming to achieve with that? You know, how about you try and push to a certain intensity for a small space of time, just like an Allegro exercise? Yeah. And I guess it's the same with working in the gym too. Mm-hmm. Like you can spend forever doing leg circles on a reformer, but you know, you're probably not going to get your legs higher if you're not standing up against gravity and pushing some resistance in that range. Yeah. So I guess, where would you start? And like, how young do you start with your dancers too? So I would say like age 14, 13, 14, 15, that's actually fine as long as it's age appropriate and it makes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there's someone to supervise. Yep. You know, it's interesting that both you and I didn't really come across weightlifting or using resistance until we were 19, 20, 21 maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, where do you start? Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think things have changed so much as well, because when I think back to when I was dancing quite a bit, we never had conditioning classes like they do now. You know, most of my full-time and part-time dancers are doing conditioning almost every single day as part of their program. So I think almost they're from a younger age, probably introduced to it more than we certainly were. You know, they're already starting to do those conditioning programs. So that kind of helps, you know, if they're already in a full-time program and they're doing conditioning every day, it makes my job even a little bit easier just to put in, you know, it might be one or two exercises that they add in their conditioning section. And I think also the equipment that studios have now is a lot better, right? Like if I think back to my studio, we didn't have any weights. We didn't even have fit balls. There was no TheraBands around. There wasn't any of that. Like
maybe.
Yeah.
You know, we went there behind. To dance.
There wasn't conditioning. There wasn't strength really. So when I ask a lot of students, you know, what have you got at the studio? They've actually, a lot of them have got weights, and you can do a lot, right? Although we're talking about heavy resistance stuff, there's actually a lot of really good body weight exercises, like, you know, a Copenhagen adductor or a foot elevated hamstring bridge. And there's actually a lot that you can do that are pretty hard exercises, right? But you can do them body weight. But I think a lot of schools have such good equipment these days. So even if I'm just putting in, you know, a single leg deadlift but holding a dumbbell, it's a nice transition for dancers. And it's still, you know, we can call it an arabesque exercise if you like, and it seems a bit more dancey. So I think it's easier to transition, and I think so much has changed. But I certainly
agree. Teachers are probably open to purchasing things, I think, like to actually buying, to buying. You know, they say, well, what do you think I need? Should I do this? Should I do that? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. And within the clinic, I see a lot of the dance teachers as well. So it's kind of a nice, you know, I'm seeing all of these levels from a dance school of, I kind of can talk to the teacher and say, yeah, this, you know, this is what we need. Or, you know, if they've got an injury, they can kind of see that benefit. So I think it has probably filtered down quite well compared to when we were younger of starting doing conditioning stuff and then transferring into heavier stuff, you know, once you're safe and competent to do so.
Yeah. So if you were going to take a dancer through the gym, say that they have a gym membership outside their studio, where would you start? So what are some of the things that you really enjoy giving to dancers? Yeah. You mentioned like single leg RDL kind mm-hmm. of type exercises. I really yep. like those as well. Yeah, and like plyometric things mm-hmm. are also, and I love the Copenhagen adductor. It is a killer, but it's surprising, but it's really good. So tell us if you're okay with sharing, what are some of your favorites?
Of course. So it probably is based on goals a little bit, but probably my favorite exercises to give, I love a good single leg press. And I also think that a single leg knee extension is actually underrated, as boring an exercise as it is. It is underrated in so many aspects. So from a machine point of view, for lower leg, absolutely single leg, but I do love the leg press and knee extension. I think upper body is probably an area that does get neglected somewhat as well. So I think exercises like a band assisted pull up or something like that, I think dancers automatically feel really strong doing that. Like, I think mentally a pull up is a very empowering exercise, if that kind of doesn't sound too crazy, but you feel like an absolute unit when you're doing it. Do you know what I mean? And even though the band's kind of springing you up half the way, you feel strong. I always find that dancers, they hate it, but they love that exercise for how it makes them feel.
And how useful is that for pas de deux as well? You know, if you have to support your own self against a partner pushing up into a big lift, like as soon as you try to kind of, or as soon as you paint, I guess, the functionality of mm-hmm. the exercise, and you were saying the single leg extension before, single mm-hmm. knee extension, you know, I guess there is the whole dancers can't have bulky quads kind of, but I mean, they do need to have strong patella tendons. Correct. So if you think, okay, like realistically, the amount of strength training you're trying to do, it's not going to be hypertrophy based mm-hmm. and it's, you're not going to be in the gym often enough really to have that kind of, and the amount Absolutely. Of time you need that end range knee mm-hmm. extension to have a straight leg line. So we're talking about straightening your knee the full way.
Yeah. Which is pretty crucial for ballet, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Let alone things. So I hear that myth. That's probably the first rebuttal, if you like, that I get when I say, let's do some gym stuff, is I don't want to get quads like footy players. It's the biggest thing that I hear. But as you said so perfectly, I think if dancers knew how hard it was to build that, you know, how many times a day, let alone a week, these, you know, bodybuilders, sportsmen, weightlifters are training, but also they're eating in a huge calorie surplus. Combined with some genetics, plus or minus some pharmacological assistance. You know, a lot of the time there's more to it. I don't think no one gets huge accidentally. Do you know what I mean? So I think for a lot of dancers, they say, but I don't want to get massive. And I say, don't worry. If you knew how intent driven those people were to get that size, you wouldn't stress about that at all. But yes, I think knee extension is so, so important. And probably at the ballet company, this year particularly, we've had a lot of knee injuries, more than I've probably ever seen at the ballet company before. And, you know, things kind of come in waves, don't they, depending on what season you're doing, what's the variation, et cetera, et cetera. And I think COVID probably has played a bit of a part in that, right? So I don't think I've ever seen as many knee injuries, particularly in females, actually, you know, but yeah, we've seen a few this year. So, and we've just this year actually at the ballet company really changed up our gym situation, whereas traditionally, yeah, even probably last year still, we had cross trainers, heaps of Pilates stuff, you know, TheraBands, things like that, which are all absolutely useful. But this year, thankfully, we've gotten leg press, knee extension, full squat rack. Like, we've had a bit of a change, which I love, and the dancers are absolutely loving it. Female dancers included, they're just, they always tell me I feel so strong, Ellen, and they just absolutely love it. So it's been really, really nice to see that transition.
When I was conducting my research, I guess in terms of prescription, I was looking at prescribing research, resistance training for bone. And basically you have to exercise for such a long time, many, many months, to be able to see a change and then to actually go and do a DEXA to see whether that's made any difference to bone.
Yeah.
But the dancers were doing their exercises before class, and it was like half an hour session, but probably the total time they were lifting was about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes. And they were just really basic compound exercises. So it was probably did get a bit boring. But, you know, they would cheer each other on and, you know, they would be squatting and deadlifting just twice a week. And nothing crazy in terms of weight. And I have to say, because it was in the middle of COVID, it probably did limit their progression a bit too.
Yeah.
But they said it just makes everything feel easier. Like it makes it easier for me to hold my arms in second, for me to hold my arms in fifth if you've been pushing 15 kilos above your head or something before you go into class. Of course it's going to feel
all of a sudden
easier.
Yeah.
It's and it's sort of, you know, that reflection was really interesting. And I think as they got sort of more used to what the strength training felt like, they were better able to work out how hard to push or how, you know, whether they needed an easier morning depending on what was coming later in the day. So how do you work that with a professional dancer, because obviously their workload is really sometimes really unpredictable. Like they do have rehearsals called, you know, the schedule can change, you know, within a couple of days, you know, notice. And I guess you know, they're adults, so they're probably also used to lifting a little bit more. But how do you work with periodizing the strength training for your dancers?
I think the few that I can think of who kind of currently have injuries now who are doing, or you know, have a prescribed kind of exercise or strength block, they're currently doing those probably 3 days a week, just because, as I said, they're dealing with injuries and it's that recovery that is needed. So as you said, they're adults, so giving people, okay, you've got 3 times a week that you need to load this. Ideally, we'd like a day in between if we can, but sometimes that doesn't happen. Yeah. So if you've got a heavier day, okay, let's have a lighter session today and push heavier tomorrow. So absolutely tailoring it around their daily load, but then absolutely coming into the season where we change into the theater. It's a different floor. We don't have access to the gym space because we're not at the ballet center. Late nights, you know, everything changes when you get into the theater. So absolutely having that conversation of things have to, we need to maintain things, but things have to step a little bit back when you're super fatigued, you know, stress is high, floors are different, all of those aspects kind of come into it. And I think in my training, you know, if I think about it, I force myself every 4 weeks to have a deload week, regardless of how I feel or anything. So I basically build up for 3, and then my 4th week steps it back a week, basically, where I pretty much would lift maybe 80% of what I'd done on my peak week. And I find for me that allows really good progressive overload, i.e. I can lift heavier, but also from a recovery injury point of view, that 4 week kind of dip. And that's what we see a lot in research and across a lot of different field sports, and probably just anecdotally with ballet as well, is, you know, it's that 4 week period coming back from a break or coming back after a holiday period or an injury, that, you know, that 28 days after, which is so often, 4 weeks, you get that crash where everyone gets pretty sore, pretty exhausted, and injuries often
the physio room is full.
Absolutely. My list
no
is
appointments available.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I think it is actually such a hard thing, because dancers do train ordinarily. I guess if you're a full-time dancer or a professional dancer, you're looking at a base workload of, like, to be honest, probably 25 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And then in a really full rehearsal week, maybe 32 to 35 hours a week. Because in a professional company, not everyone gets called to every rehearsal.
Yeah.
And I guess in like a full-time ballet school, everyone is called to every rehearsal because it's a class. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a really high training load to physically maintain, like 365 days every year, like 52 weeks of the year.
Yes.
And so you got to have a holiday somewhere. But I think then what happens in holidays is that it just gets such a big drop-off. With load. And, you know, I guess strength training can be kind of a way to push that intensity, but in a short space of time, so you're not spending every day of your holidays pushing at that maximal level. Mm-hmm. But then coming back in after having that big holiday break, mm-hmm. like it's probably really important then to periodize your supplementary training as well. Absolutely. As the dance stuff. You mentioned that some of the dancers that you're working with are currently mm-hmm. injured, mm-hmm. but they're also doing strength training. Yeah. So I guess, do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Because I find that that's a really a time when a lot of dancers get really afraid to do mm-hmm. things like, yes, they want to maintain turnout and they want to maintain flexibility, mm-hmm. but you give them some upper body weights to do and they're kind of a little bit, why am I doing this? Yeah, do you want to talk a little bit about what you normally give a dancer, maybe with a lower limb injury, because that's pretty common for ballet. Yeah.
I like to explain it to the dancer of, this is your time. You know, you've got X amount of time where you're recovering from whatever injury. Potentially you can't dance for a period of time. This is your time to work on all of the things that you've ever wanted to work on. You know, everyone has that correction that they always get, or, you know, that part of them that doesn't feel as strong or whatever it is. So utilize that time to focus on what you can, basically. So I absolutely like to supplement everything else. So say if they've got a knee injury, well, absolutely, there's still so much stuff around the hip they can do, so much stuff around the foot and ankle they can do, hamstring stuff, glute stuff. So you're still loading the lower leg, but you know, you can kind of get around that area that is injured. But then I also think for so many of them, and this is certainly what we've seen with a few of the knee injuries that we've ended up having after COVID, is that quad of that knee injury side has just absolutely gone to nothing. So we've got a specialist physio that we often work with here in Perth. His name's Miles Murphy, and he's a tendon researcher. So we've ended up kind of consulting with him for a few of these knee injuries that kind of just were behaving a bit funnily. And he does a lot of strength testing, which was awesome to see, because it's sometimes nice having another set of eyes or another person saying, no, let's push this, let's strength test it, where a lot of dancers are probably a little bit nervous to really push to that level. So he's done a lot of strength testing with these dancers, and the discrepancies, whether that's because of pain or whether that's, you know, a muscle inhibition thing, the discrepancies on that side have been huge. You know, I'm talking 50% strength on the affected side. So that, I think, actually the dancers seeing, hold on a second, I can leg press, you know, 40 kilos, or sorry, knee extend 40 kilos on one side, and on my other side I'm at 18, and that, you know, it feels hard. It's not that it feels sore, it feels like I can't do it. It's been such a driver, and we've had such amazing effects with these dancers for buy-in of, let's do more strength stuff, because they've just seen, oh my gosh, you know, it's not pain that's limiting here, it's that I unfortunately have deconditioned and weakened on that side. And then you think, no wonder it's sore, you know. So yeah, we've had actually a really good buy-in, I think, for strength work, you know, in specific areas, even if they're injured, just because of almost showing them the changes that have happened.
And imagine too, you know, if that's, you know, you need to land on that leg that's actually, you know, so much weaker than the other side. Mm-hmm. If you're landing a grand jeté and you're half as strong on one side, how is that actually helping your situation either? That's the thing. And how can you expect to get back to your 100% mm-hmm. if you're not at your 100%?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so interesting. So what sort of things do you use in clinic to measure this? So you're saying you measure, okay, 40, 18 kilos. Mm-hmm. Have you got handheld dynamometers? So like devices that you push in that give you like a Newton force or something like that, that you go with, or?
No, we don't actually have any dynamometers within the clinic. I've got barbells and weights within the clinic, and then we just have a reformer. But this is where, and I mean, you've got to be able to trust the person and make sure they're safe to do this, but I do a lot of research, send them off to the gym to basically do their own strength testing, and because I'm doing it on machines a lot of the time, it's completely safe to do so. Do you know what I mean? So I'm sending people off, giving them parameters of what I want them to measure, and then they come back to me with numbers, which has worked really well. You can't really go too wrong with knee extension.
Yeah, yep. I guess on the machines it is a lot easier. Yeah. Like it's very controlled sort of environment. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
nice. And I think sometimes, you know, we have the luxury of smartphones these days too. You can just film one side versus the other side.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's that like showing people, that's what it looks like, or you completely squatting on your right leg.
On one
and
leg,
even trusting the other side.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sometimes it's those sort of measures that kind of spark a realization.
And dancers are so visual, so I think once you point it out to them in a mirror, they see it.
Mm.
And then, as you said, you know, if you can't even body weight squat without shifting your weight away from that leg, how are you going to land a grand jeté when you have to land all of your body weight? And we know Danica Hendry, who's a really good friend and physio here. She's done her initial research was on landing forces with dancers. And, you know, we know a grand jeté can be 5 to 7 times your body weight going through that single leg upon landing. So if you can't do a body weight squat and put 50% through that leg, you know, if we think about the loads and forces that are going through within a class, it's huge. Yeah.
Mm. Other times, I guess I could see that strength might change too, would be during growth spurts for adolescent dancers. And I guess you and I see a lot of adolescent dancers in clinic. So not just with an injury, but also with a really massive growth spurt.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's really hard sometimes for teachers and parents to realize that that's happened because they see the student multiple times a week or, you know, every day. How do you prescribe around a growth spurt? Do you make any recommendations around dance training load as well, or like how do you get a dancer stronger while they're growing and dancing a lot? Just a simple question for you.
that's fine. I think education is probably the biggest thing, because a lot, and I mean, we all grew once, but we all forget so quickly of what that felt like. Do you know what I mean? So I think for parents, they don't, and for dance teachers actually, it's hard to sympathize because we don't really remember what that felt like. But growing is necessary, but so hard on your body. You know, the changes in muscle length. So I often also have young dancers come in saying, I've lost all my flexibility, you know, within a really short space of time, and they're kind of in freak out mode. So I think education is probably the biggest one to say, it's okay, like it will get there. I think the other thing apart from flexibility is coordination. You know, like you almost get a little bit unaware of where your limbs are in space. If all of a sudden your shin is, you know, 3 centimeters longer, obviously ideally on both sides, you know, jumping, you're going to hit the floor quicker. You know, there's a whole different coordination aspect to it as well. And then I think within the clinic, I do also see, again, in active populations of kids, those kind of growing related injuries. So severs, we get where the Achilles inserts, and then Osgood Schlatter's, which is around the knee patella tendon. So often they do have pain, but as you said, sometimes they're just coming in reporting that they just don't feel quite right. Education is a big one to explain that this is a normal process and it will change and grow out of it. But absolutely, you have to be a bit nicer to your body in that time, right? I still absolutely encourage conditioning throughout it. But as you said, if things are a bit grumbly, especially if they are getting pain, then just taking a back seat a little bit is sometimes not a bad idea, right? Like recovery is everything. And if your body is getting sore and grumpy at you, then listening to it is clever.
And I guess, you know, that is also hard when you're dancing and you might be one of the best dancers at your school and you're super committed to every performance team. And, you know, I think it's hard to know what to prioritize sometimes. Mm-hmm. So selling conditioning and and things like that is really hard when you go, well, but I'm already sore and I'm already committed to all of these performance groups and exams and competitions. I think it can be a bit of a hard sell.
Yes.
I guess on that note, like any success stories in terms of, you know, people who have recognized, hang on, I need to take a little bit of a backseat, as you said, just slow down and work on my conditioning, and then who've actually come out a lot stronger and achieved a whole lot more as a result of taking a bit of a back step from dance, working on those more fundamental things like balance and strength, and then building their dance back up to have like a real win. I don't know. Yes. Feel free to share.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Yeah, probably one particular dancer comes to mind, and she unfortunately had probably almost 2 years of recurrent stress injuries within the same foot. She had an absolutely unlucky slog with that, where we got to the point where we were actually investigating, you know, other causes, you know, other sinister causes of why is this happening. So she got a lot of medical input, and she decided then to take some time off ballet, which was very, very hard because she was in basically the prime of getting into a company. She was right at that 16, 17 kind of age group. She was a beautiful, beautiful dancer and a beautiful person. So she has taken pretty much this whole year off, and she is the most diligent person that I've ever met in my life. And she has done every single thing that the physios and medical professionals have told her, and she has definitely come out better off for it. And even after all that kind of hardship, she's still got a real goal to get back to dancing. And yeah, the improvements that she's made have just been huge, huge.
And has she started some dancing yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we unfortunately kept getting to a point where she'd just start any jumping load, and then she'd have another stressy. And it was, it was hard for all of us. It was we were all interested in her recovery. But she's now jumping, she's doing some plyo stuff at the gym, she's starting point stuff again. So she's doing really great. And I think almost the mental stuff that was happening, there was so much pressure on her within the school that she was in. And she was putting so much pressure on herself, which I completely understand. But as soon as she actually stepped back out of that environment, everything changed. And obviously there's still a physiological thing happening with her foot. I'm not saying it was just a mental thing, but I think for her, the pressure was just too much and it was actually getting unhealthy. So she made that very, very hard decision to step away for a bit. And I wholeheartedly believe that she'll get back to dancing now that she is so much healthier, stronger, and probably more determined than ever. So I think, I think having an injury can be a real blessing in disguise. I know it's hard to see at the time, but I think that's our biggest job, is to teach people how much better they can get within that time and how they can utilize that time to their advantage.
Yeah. Sometimes even just understanding your body a little bit better and
and
you do get really invested in dance and it becomes the everything.
Your whole world. Yep.
Yeah. So just sort of taking some time and realizing that there is a world outside of dance that
is,
you know, it's revolving there and it's there.
And also knowing when to push and when to pull back. And I think some dancers unfortunately have to learn that the hard way. But as you said, learning so much about your body and learning that sometimes things do give and you have to learn, okay, now is the time that I need to deload a little bit, or I need to pull back from this situation, rather than just grinding yourself into the ground, which I think traditionally from a cultural perspective, we've always been taught.
absolutely. If you could research anything, and I don't know if you have done some research, maybe that was part of your degree initially. Some physio degrees, you do a bit of research before you graduate. But if you could, do you have any questions you'd like to answer with research? Because I feel like you're thinking about a lot of stuff. It's
I'd love to go back and do my master's at some point. I think I'm still building to that. I still just have a little bit more to do career-wise before I want to step back with that work. But I definitely would love to go back to uni and do my master's. I think I see a lot of bone stress injuries, and I know that's an area of interest for you as well. I know there's there are a few screening tools out there for bone stress injury, but I think potentially looking at, and it's hard, but some kind of injury prevention measure or tool, almost like the FIFA 11, which they use in soccer players, where potentially we could make or look at, you know, finding a valid injury prevention measure for bone stress. I think would be
yeah
very good.
That sounds cool. Maybe we should talk in another few years when you're ready to start that.
I think there's space for it. I think it's hard, but
I'll recruit some patients. I think that sounds so cool. And so what are the goals for you in the next 1 to 2 years as a physio? Yeah. Where can we find you? What's happening? What's going on in the life of Ellen?
So I'll definitely be staying at the ballet. So I'm there every single morning of the week. So I basically just split my time up between being there in the mornings before and during company class. And then I basically run off to the clinic in the afternoons, evenings. I'm actually kind of excitingly enough in the process of opening my own physio practice here in Perth, which will be centered around dance physio. And hopefully that kind of kicks off in the next couple of months. And eventually I'd love, probably over the next couple of years, love to build that to almost like a little bit of a multidisciplinary clinic or a little bit of a hub where we might have a dietitian or a psych, everyone that's kind of had a dance background or is interested in that world, and have a space that is very accessible and tailored to dancers. So that's pretty much where my brain's been in the last kind of 6 months or so, is just trying to build the business.
Sounds great. It sounds amazing. And I'm guessing that you're going to have a knee extension machine in your clinic. Fantastic. So dance is in Perth. You can look out for that one, or if you're visiting Perth for any reason. And so I guess we're going to finish our chat very shortly. It's been great. And I feel like I could talk to you all day because I feel like we encounter really similar, really similar clinical things day to day. But you've danced on point, obviously. And I'd like to hear, obviously, this is the pre-point pod. I'd really like to hear about which point shoes you used to wear, or if you still wear point shoes. What are your favorite point shoes and why?
When I was dancing quite a lot and doing a lot of my major ballet exams, I wore Sanches. We're actually really limited here in Perth still for point shoes, which is a real shame. But you actually can't even get Sanches anymore in Perth. So in Perth, we really literally have 2 to 3 brands that you can choose from. So I wore Sanches basically, my whole kind of, you know, serious dancing time. And I love them. I've got actually fairly wide foot, so they actually just a shape wise fit me quite well. And then probably in my early 20s, probably 20 or so, I changed to wearing Gaynor Mindens. And I loved them. I never looked back. I wish I had found Gaynors earlier, actually. I think they're an easy shoe. You know what I mean? Especially when you're in your 20s. I loved the ease of them. I didn't have to break them in. They were ready to go. It was just, it was nice at that time in my life to not have to spend, you know, all that time preparing your shoes to wear the next day.
Yeah, true. But it's interesting that you say that in your 20s. It like a Gaynor became easier to dance in. What were the differences, like the key differences between you dancing, doing all your major exams and things versus you dancing in your 20s? And would you recommend the same thing for your patients now? I mean,
it's interesting. So I do a lot of fittings for Gaynors, which is basically when I started wearing them. And I'm a physio well before I'm a Gaynor fitter. I always say that. I loved them, but I wonder whether I was just stronger then. I think I'd learned a lot in physio and I'd already started to implement some of those strength changes, adding foot intrinsics, which I'd never done growing up ever, where I probably was actually stronger then, even though I wasn't dancing as much, I probably had a stronger foot and better awareness. So I wonder whether, was it that I liked Gaynors more, or was it that I was just, you know, more prepared for them. Yeah, I think it was just the ease of them. I think once you can find a Gaynor that works for you, you know, they're literally performance ready. There's no breaking in that happens. They're pre-arch. Like, it's all of that ease that we love when you're a bit older.
Yeah.
So it was probably more the preparation stage for me that I just thought, oh, this is the easiest shoe ever. Why didn't I wear this earlier?
Yeah, true. Yeah, and I guess, you know, you're probably not dancing on point for as many hours. And yeah, you're skeletally mature. You've done all of the hard yards.
Yes, absolutely. Know. Yeah. So it's hard to say, is it a better shoe for me, or was I just better?
Or I mean, Ellen at 15 versus Ellen at 25.
Absolutely.
But I love
them.
Yeah, because point, I guess, yeah, that it's a bit of an evolution, that whole journey, really.
Oh, yes. I always call it my point shoe midlife crisis. I wore Sanchez, but it took me a long time to find the perfect shoe. I know some people get lucky and find it, but I didn't have such ease.
Thank you so much for this chat. I feel like, again, we've covered so much. And, thank you so much for your time and for joining us on the Prepoint Pod. I'm looking forward to catching up with you again in the future, I'm sure.
Hopefully when we can travel, I'll pop over to Brizzy.
Sounds good. I'll see you then.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much, Louise.
Thank you. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.